If you'd like to listen to the Daily Blast, plus all of our other DSR content without ads, please consider becoming a member. In addition to no ads, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, access to our Discord community, and enhanced show notes for select shows. For this week only, get 50% off the first year or first month of membership. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and use code GREG to receive the discount. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code GREG. Thank you very much for your support.
This is the Daily Blast from the New Republic, produced and presented by the DSR Network. I'm your host, Greg Sargent.
A few days ago, Elon Musk triggered outrage by promoting an extraordinarily vicious speech by a far-right Dutch activist that pushed virulent white nationalist ideologies. Musk added that Europe is threatened by population collapse and suggested that in the long run this could lead to what he called dead civilizations. Something often gets lost in these controversies. It's that the ideas Musk is pushing here are part of a genuine movement, one that's shaped around long-term anxieties about demographics. So today we're talking to Gabby Del Valle, author of a new piece for Politico magazine that digs deep into the campaign on the far right to get people, or certain people anyway, to have more babies. LaValle writes for The Verge about this and other related issues like immigration and great replacement theory. Welcome, Gabby.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start here. In your piece, you describe a political and social movement that's shaped around existential fears of falling birth rates, primarily in Western liberal democracies. You call it NatalCon for short. Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, so the Natalist Conference is, or describes itself as being concerned with both the decline in birth rates in the U.S. and Western Europe and the decline in birth rates globally. But it was pretty fundamentally conservative. Most of the speakers were conservative. One of them was Michael Anton, who worked in the Trump White House. And there, the movement's concern is not just with the decline in birth rates, but kind of in raising birth rates among conservatives specifically.
Yeah, and Elon Musk is a major proponent of a version of these theories. He sometimes tweets that civilization is in trouble due to declining birth rates. But now Musk has upped the ante. He shared a speech by a far-right Dutch activist who said the replacement of white Europeans by immigrants will mean the end of civilization. He's got this pinned at the top of his feed as we speak. So Musk did take issue with the idea that Europeans are being replaced, saying that instead populations are simply disappearing due to, quote, low birth rates, close quote. Yet Musk constantly elevates all kinds of vile anti-immigrant tropes. And here he didn't seem to dispute this activist's core idea that the disappearance of white people could soon lead Western countries to fall into ruin. Isn't this a version of this movement right there from Musk?
Yeah, I would say it's a version of it for sure. It's a very interesting kind of contradiction because a lot of the speakers talked about the decline in birth rates in the U.S., what we can do to increase birth rates, why we need more people to, you know, like fund Social Security and like take care of our aging population. But immigration was never brought up as a potential solution. And in fact, some speakers brought up immigration as kind of a non-starter. They never talked about the Great Replacement explicitly at the conference, but there were, you know, some hints. One of the speakers said that, you know, immigrants, we could think of them as a solution, but ultimately they'll realize that they were brought here to take care of old white people and pay into Social Security for them, and they won't be too happy about that. And I think that the concern that a lot of these people have is not just that birth rates are declining, but that they see themselves as a civilization that is not only dying out, but that in some cases is, or according to some of them, is dying out as a result of a sort of orchestrated plan.
Yes, and that's something that Musk hints at a lot, right? I want to focus on something you said there, which is that they don't see immigration as a solution, right? So for liberals and leftists, immigration solves a lot of these long-term demographic problems. It could create more taxpayers of working age to pay into Social Security. It could populate places that are suffering decline in the heartland. In fact, there are even efforts to move immigrants to some of these places. And you even have red state governors, a few of them anyway, saying that they want more migrant workers in their states because they need them, right? But what your piece drew out, I think, is that these anxieties about birth rates actually dovetail with anxieties about immigration, right? They don't see immigration as a solution to long-term demographic decline. They see it as contributing to the problem. I mean, isn't the problem for them, at least some of them, the browning of these Western populations? You quote one activist who wasn't at this conference, but is a member of this movement in some sense, talking about the need to secure the future for white children. Others keep this kind of disguised, like Musk, who's careful to talk about the threat to quote-unquote civilization. Isn't there some very crafty code wording going on here? I mean, what's the real ideology at work? What are they saying?
I think there's a whole spectrum here. I think there were some people at the conference who were genuinely very concerned with the decline in birth rates, like people like Malcolm and Simone Collins, who are these like kind of tech libertarian types who have pledged to have 7 kids to do their part for the depopulation crisis. But then there are other people who, not at the conference, but elsewhere in their writings, have talked about how, you know, we can finally admit that the Great Replacement is real, who have talked about how the elites are trying to import people from a different culture into the United States. And I think for a lot of people, there is an anxiety, not just about like population, not just like looking at, you know, numbers on a chart or like the trending population line, but like who is having kids? And this isn't a particularly new movement, I would say. This iteration of it is certainly new. But I mean, at the turn of the 20th century, there was a similar kind of pronatalist movement that argued that old stock white Americans were being outbred by unsavory immigrants. But at the time, the unsavory immigrants they were talking about were like Irish and Italian and Jewish and Slavic. It's kind of echoing the same language, just targeted at different groups.
Yeah, what you're getting at there is that the anxiety is about the demographic mix in some of these Western countries. You've also written about how Musk has pushed the Great Replacement Theory, and clearly these ideas dovetail with one another, right? You certainly have some proponents of having more babies who pair that with a warning that if immigrants are imported, the population will kind of get out of hand demographically. There's another thing Musk says that you get at in your piece, which is that wokeness is a threat to civilization. And the subtext there is that social liberalism, LGBTQ and abortion rights and feminism dovetail with Great Replacement Theory, right? In that those things, social liberal ideologies discourage having a lot of children and therefore are contributing to the decline of native populations, and thus the decline of what they call civilization. Can you talk about this aspect of the movement, this idea that wokeness is also a long-term threat, and what they really mean by that?
So I think some people see it as just being kind of a logical sequence. Like when people are delaying childbirth because women are focused on their careers, or because there are more LGBTQ couples out there, or people are just choosing not to have kids altogether, that they see as a kind of like downstream effect of wokeness. But then there are other people who kind of see all of these things as a concerted effort by the elites to trick people into not having kids. There's kind of layers to it. For the more conspiratorially minded people, there is, you know, a democratic or a global Soros plot, basically, to sterilize white people or Americans or Europeans, not literally, but to use the culture as a sort of sterilization tactic. And that's kind of what they mean when they say that wokeness is contributing to population decline. People have delayed fertility compared to previous like decades. Like if you look at the population charts, like fertility rates and birth rates are down. And a lot of that is because like teen pregnancy is down. It's because the age for marriage is like later. People are getting married later, having kids later, buying homes later. But there was very little discussion of the economic reasons or other structural reasons why this might be happening. It was just kind of all largely blamed on wokeness, on the elites not wanting you to have kids.
And it's interesting how they see the elites scheming, right? So there are multiple facets to the conspiracy. So the elites are A, importing non-white immigrants into Western countries, and B, they're suppressing the native birth rate by encouraging things like LGBTQ and abortion rights and feminism. And so this movement makes a critique of liberalism that maybe is worth thinking about, right, in some ways. They sort of say that liberal democratic capitalism encourages a kind of obsession with self-fulfillment and capitalist acquisitiveness, right, that discourages the having of babies. And so, okay, that seems something more worth discussing than the really conspiratorial stuff about how social liberalism is really a secret scheme to suppress fertility. Can you talk about the sort of those two strands, one which is kind of legit and the other which is really kind of crazy?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of things discussed at the conference that on their face, you know, are logical and do make sense. One of the speakers talked about like endocrine disruptors in our food and microplastics in our water and all of these things that because of a lack of regulation into what Americans eat and how our food is grown and how all of these things are produced could lead to not just infertility, but to all kinds of other hormonal problems. Like, sure, that's worth talking about. Some speakers talked about how capitalist excess, like the pursuit of a career above all else, has encourage people to think about themselves as individuals rather as members of a community or as members of a family. And I think, you know, we have made it much harder for people who want to start families to start families because of things like student loan debt and the rising cost of housing and stagnating wages. But yeah, these critiques often gave way to other speakers who, you know, talked about repealing the Civil Rights Act or banning no-fault divorce. And I don't want to, you know, paint them all with too broad a brush. Like, there were different people who made these different points at the conference. And some of the speakers themselves said, like, we don't all agree on all of these things. But I think it's interesting that they're putting aside their personal ideological differences to come together in this way, because there were pretty significant ideological differences among the speakers.
It certainly sounds like they span a range of different views. Let's talk about what this movement sees as solutions to the problem, right? And I want to pick up on something you said there. Many on the left do support certain policies making it easier to have kids, such as a child tax credit, more spending on public education and universal daycare, efforts to boost wages at the lower end of the income scale, like you mentioned, and so forth. But these thinkers, at least the more conspiratorial of them and the more kind of post-liberal of them, envision something else, right? They want to use state power to clamp down on the sorts of social liberalism that to them nefariously keep birth rates low, right? Limits on contraception. Obviously, we're seeing red states pass anti-LGBTQ and anti-trans stuff. Obviously, limits on abortion that are getting worse in many of these states. Is that a fair point? Am I right about that Do they want to use state coercion to drive up the fertility rate in some sense?
I think some of them do and some of them don't. I think some of them kind of want to completely opt out of the system altogether. They kind of just want to focus on their own, not entirely off-grid, but sort of off-grid communities. They talked a lot about, you know, like building parallel economies, just like kind of completely opting out of the system. I think others would like to, you know, limit abortion, limit access to contraception. As I said before, ban no-fault divorce. I mean, there are representatives there from the Heritage Foundation, which is involved in Project 2025. But then there were also people who were kind of happy, or at least said they were kind of happy to just like let liberals die out on their own, let the left die out on their own. They were talking about how, to quote one of the speakers, the other side is sterilizing themselves. And even the ones who are having kids aren't having that many kids. Like, the libs are having like 1 to 2 kids if they're having kids at all because they're so scared of climate change. Meanwhile, we're having 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 kids. So I think for a lot of people, it's not even about coercing others. It's just like, well, we're going to have more babies than you and we're going to make up more of the population than you. So good luck.
That brings me to the ways in which this movement kind of bleeds into other movements like white nationalism and Christian nationalism, which your piece really illustrated, I think, vividly. It's really an anti-pluralist movement in the end, right? They think that if enough like-minded people have enough babies, future majorities will look like them and think like them. So their answer to pluralism and political disagreement is to outnumber everybody else. I just wonder why they assume all their offspring will see things that way. I mean, is there a sort of an anti-pluralist streak to all this?
I think there is an anti-pluralist streak to all of it, but it's really interesting because one of the speakers got on stage and was like, wow, we have such amazing diversity here. We've got your trad Caths, we've got your conservative Mormons. And he was totally serious. He was like, that is hugely diverse as far as opinions go. And, you know, Catholics and conservative Mormons obviously don't see everything the same, sure. But they're both like, both trad Caths and conservative Mormons are religious conservatives. And, you know, I spoke with Malcolm and Simone Collins, who were the tech couple who are planning on having 7 kids to combat over or underpopulation. And they said to me that a lot of the people they spoke to at the conference are people who have kids and even have grandkids, but their grandkids aren't having kids. Or if they have kids, their kids aren't having kids. And they're afraid that their ways of living are going to die out. They're afraid that they're going to be the last members of their bloodline or that they won't be able to pass on their ideology to their children. There are, you know, plenty of statistics and studies that show that most people do get both their religion and their political ideology from their parents to some degree. So I don't think it's entirely like off base to say that if you raise your children to be conservative Christians, that they will probably grow up to be conservative Christians, but it's not a guarantee. It's not foolproof. And I think that's kind of what they're counting on. Like if you have 8 kids and 2 of them like become drag queen liberals, then you've still got 6 more. I don't know.
I guess that could work. I mean, it's interesting to me that they really want to sort of solve the problem of political disagreement and divided communities by kind of outnumbering the people who don't think like them. Let's just bring this back to Elon Musk for a sec. One thing we're seeing pretty regularly is he's using Twitter or X or whatever to elevate the ideas of these types of movements in a very concerted way. There's a really flourishing global information space devoted to it. You've written about Musk elevating great replacement theory, which, as we discussed, is a related idea. When does this all come down to? We do have to understand what ideas Musk is really pushing here. When he goes out there and does these tweets, he's drawing on a very large set of developed ideas and ideologies that have a real movement behind them. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's a pretty clear line between like the Charlottesville tiki torch people chanting Jews will not replace us to the Elon Musk tweets about the great replacement. Like, I think it's in a way a kind of pick and choose ideology. I think some people really do just believe that due to structural factors not being controlled by anyone, white people are being outbred by people of color, and they have a problem with that in and of itself. But then there are also people who believe that there's some kind of like globalist conspiracy to eliminate the white race through immigration, through like what they call gender ideology, through wokeness, through liberalism. And that gets tied up into a bunch of other stuff. I mean, I've written for the Baffler before about like tradwife influencers and this sort of idea of the Great Reset, which like very, very briefly, it's just like this idea that the elites use COVID to basically, yeah, kill us all off, make us live in pods, eat bugs. Some of them are afraid of like 15-minute cities. Like they've just like they have this critique of liberalism that I think is pretty salient, which is that, you know, we're being asked to make less money, to live with less, to eat food that is bad for us, to put off having families if we want them. Those are all, that's all true. But then like they're like they're, you ask them why, who's doing this? And they're like, it's the Jews.
That's the thing. And they can't imagine that liberals on the left have a set of ideas that would combat a lot of these problems, that they're that you know, a lot of us agree that we should be having more flourishing families. We want to create the economic and social conditions to do that.
Yeah, I think the other problem, too, is that a lot of them see like the left's vision for families also as kind of a threat. I mean, in the sense that they kind of see cultural pluralism as a threat. They see like LGBTQ people having children as a threat. They see parents allowing their kids to transition as a threat. They see all of these things as a threat to the established social order.
To wrap this up, where does Musk fit into all this? He is one of the most powerful proponents of these theories in the world, right?
I think in a way he is, but in another way, Musk is a little bit harder to pin down. It's really hard to say whether he has an ideology or if he's just shitposting or if he's shitposting but he believes it. It's really, really hard to say. But it ultimately doesn't really matter if he's joking about believing in the Great Replacement or not. Like, he's still mainstreaming it. He has a massive audience and a massive platform.
Put it this way, he's deeply influential in creating a flourishing online global space for this type of information and this type of anxiety, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, even since his takeover of Twitter or X, there has been, I'm not sure if it's a proliferation of this content in a way that there wasn't before, or if it was always there and it was previously getting flagged and moderated and taken down and now it's not. But he has certainly created an online ecosystem where people can kind of discuss these ideas that would have otherwise been relegated to like 8chan and those corners of the internet more publicly and in front of more people.
And he's having a lot of success at that. No matter what you think of what a cesspool X has become, he is succeeding at doing that. Well, Gabby Del Valle, thanks so much for coming on with us. This was really interesting.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Folks, make sure to check out some new content up at TNR.com. Matt Ford on the push by corporate interests to challenge Biden's new pro-labor non-compete rule, and Liza Featherstone on a new campaign to end the practice of charging people for water, which should be treated as a public good. We'll see you all tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Daily Blast with me, your host, Greg Sargent. The Daily Blast is a New Republic podcast and is produced by Riley Fessler and the DSR Network.